is wise. Your voice is a song that can make a man strong when the hope in him dies. You are beautiful. Just ahead of a storm. You are too beautiful. Your smile is sweet. Your face holds a light that is golden and bright, like a field of ripe wheat. I cannot help but stare because I see a face that is far more fair than I believe the face could be. You are too beautiful. Your smile is wise. Your voice is a song that can make a man strong when the hope in him dies. Yeah, you are beautiful. You are beautiful. You are so
into stars when they die and live again in the midnight sky, that the summer rains are the tears they cry, that the wind on the plain is their lullaby to the ones they love and have bid goodbye. They say they keep a bright, ever watchful eye on the moon-kissed world from their place in the sky. They say that people go there when they die and turn into stars. And so will I.
It's WHFR Dearborn, and it's now time for the new WHFR Journal.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. This is Friday, February the 15th, 2008. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM. Non-commercial, educational, independent from public radio and any kind of financing. And so, therefore, we can say whatever we want to say as long as we say that this is not necessarily anything here on the show. Opinions expressed here are not necessarily those of anyone else at Henry Ford Community College, not necessarily faculty, staff, students, administrators, or anyone else. But we hope so. Maybe. Okay. We're trying to challenge you with ideas about local issues. Very local. Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and the surrounding area. And I think I want to start by grabbing some of my newspapers. Being strangled by my headphone cord. Not quite as long as I thought. Oh, it's all tangled. Well, that's no good. Yes, we're doing things live here in the WHFR studios, and sometimes that's a lot of fun to listen to. But, okay, let's see what's going on here. We always look very closely at the Dearborn Press and Dearborn Press and Guide newspapers from the week previous. They have both Sunday editions and Wednesday editions, and we do highly recommend that you read one or both editions of both papers if you can each week, because we can't possibly put all these words into the time that we have in 1 hour a week. But we try to highlight things and maybe make you think, challenge you to think a little more closely at the news events of the week. I'm looking at the Sunday Times, that is the Dearborn Times Herald, for Sunday, February 10th. Apparently, it might be the same edition for all these cities: Allen Park, Canton, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, Garden City, Lincoln Park, Livonia, Melvindale, Redford, Riverview, Southgate, Taylor, Trenton, Warrendale, Westline, and Wyandotte. So they all get the Sunday Times, and I suspect it's all the same issues. Trenton, Michigan, for example, in this edition is saying the mayor down there, Mayor Gerald Brown, says that there's cause for optimism in the city despite some setbacks due to Michigan's current economic climate. It's holding its own during economic woes. Well, that's good. I'm glad someone is. There is a somewhat a commercial story here about, a new Sonic restaurant is going to be built in Southgate. I remember Southgate in the olden days when it had the first McDonald's restaurant in the Downriver area. People would drive for miles. Now, this, how far back is 40-some years ago? And now, finally, they get a Sonic, I guess. The original and largest drive-in restaurant chain in the nation. Its first Michigan outlet was chosen to be Southgate, Michigan. How exciting is that? That's something puts Southgate on the map. But it's kind of interesting. It may not have been the first one in the Detroit area, but the first one, first McDonald's fast food restaurant in the area was in Southgate, I know, because I went there. I drove for miles to get to it when I was in high school back in the 60s. And yet, you know, do we need fast food? No, folks, we don't need fast food. Is it good for you? Most of it isn't, although they are trying to drop trans fat from many menus, but it's still significantly in a majority of burgers from the big chains, and I don't have a definitive study on that, but I hate to, make you uncomfortable with your fast food eating if you do that, but it's not good for you in most cases. I know that nutritional science, the latest big book that was written in detail, says nutritional science is still a work in progress. That all the health food nuts and even the fast food restaurants that they say, well, this is good, that is good. Remember, too much salt used to be bad for you, and now it's only bad for people that have certain kinds of heart problems, a limited number of us. Fats, trans fat was good in the 60s, and it's bad today, although it's quite clearly bad from the evidence we have. But, evidence changes, or like the number of planets in the solar system. When you learn more and you take a closer look, what you thought was one way is really another way. Makes life interesting, doesn't it? That's why you got to keep up. You got to keep reading and studying. And all you can do is the best you can do with the best you know at the point you're in, at the point of time that you're at. So let's not give up. But fast food, extra pounds, useless pounds that you can't lose. Why is Michigan besides the largest mortgage foreclosure rate, besides the highest unemployment, why are we the most obese population? The average people in Michigan have too much weight of all the other states in the United States. Why is that the case? Okay? Because we eat this comfort food when we're under stress from, like, losing our jobs. We eat more sugary stuff or more fats, and we don't exercise as much because we feel all stressed out and tired, so we don't have energy to exercise. Is that the case? That's all backwards, and that all can be changed. You can turn it around. I needed the scare of death a couple of years ago to change around my diet. It mainly was, I was eating healthy, but I was eating too much healthy. Is that possible? Yeah. Too many calories. Even healthy food has calories, which you need to burn for energy. But if you eat more than what you need, guess what? You can't burn them. It goes into fat in your body. And that slows your whole body down. After I lost 30, 40 pounds, oh my gosh, could I exercise? Did I have the energy? But you got to, it's hard to change. You know, I go to a restaurant now, when I do go out to restaurants, and they're not usually fast food, and I will immediately get my knife out and cut the portion down in half. I will cut it right down the center, slide half of it to the side of the plate, and only eat half. And the other half I take home and I eat over the next day or two. You say, well, you don't like leftovers. Well, the portions you get out are too big. You know, those triple-decker quarter-pounders, which is actually like three-quarters of a pound, quarter-pound burgers times three, and all that cheese and the soft bread that has no whole grains in it, so it doesn't give you any fiber in your body to help digest it all. Oh, my gosh, it's luscious to eat. I know it is, and I'm making you hungry now. I know. I'm salivating right here. Yes, right on the mic. I'm not dripping on the mic because that would be unsanitary, but I'm just saying, oh boy, oh boy. However, hey, too much even good food, and it'll slow you down, and it'll make you tired. And so got to hold back. And certainly sugar stuff, that goes right to your head. Nothing natural about eating tons of sugar. It makes you feel good, perhaps, temporarily. Sugar highs, they call them. But after that, diet beverages. Oh, those unnatural sugars. Stay away from that. Aspartame, it's under a different name here in the U.S. It's banned in Canada, though. But it's legal in the U.S. Why? It causes, like, 20% of the people that use that particular sweetener get headaches from it. That high a percent have nasty side effects. So they ban it in Canada because that's just not good that a fifth of the population drinking that beverage should be getting a headache to go along with it. How enjoyable is that? Nice, flavory beverage, and then whoop, there goes your headache. I mean, I'm sensitive to that. That's why I don't get diet drinks when I go to a movie, because I don't like to get a headache when I'm trying to enjoy myself watching a movie, right? So maybe they'll give some jobs in the Sonic restaurant, and maybe they'll have some things that you might think is healthy or not, but at least there's some new business coming in, huh? Okay. Oh, no, on page 3A of the Sunday Times, Riverview has its way with the new Burger King. Has its way. Oh, using a new structural style. Scaled down the dining areas from seating for 80 to 40. Oh, they don't take up as much land. Probably not enough people to sit in there. They're all just driving through, right? Is that it? Oh, okay. Frank Bewick in the Sunday Times last week is talking about in his column 30+1, Super Tuesday reflections. And, of course, we've heard that over and over in the major media, too, that Barack Obama seems to have a couple of votes ahead of Hillary Clinton. He's won the last eight small states. Well, not all of them are states. One is Puerto Rico, I think, or something. But so it's going to be a fight to the finish. And those superdelegates, you've heard this over and over, party regulars, chairman of Michigan Democratic Party and so on, people that aren't directly elected but still party aficionados, and some of them who are elected, they get to do votes however they want to. And in the Democratic Party's system of nominations, again, there's no laws about this and not in the Constitution, but in the Democratic Party, the way they do it is that they have a lot, like 700 of the party regulars, the status quo, the mainliners, the vested interests, you might say, have 700 out of the 2,000 votes. So almost a third of the votes are actually controlled by people that don't have to follow any voting pattern in the state. So why hold the primaries? Why hold any primaries at all for the Democratic Party if a third of the votes are just the, however the party regulars, the party machine wants to do it? You're never going to get significant change. They did this right. Let me explain, because I was in the campaign heavy duty. In fact, I was the city of Dearborn chairman for the election of the Democratic Party's presidential candidate, 72, George McGovern. Yes, we all remember George McGovern. He lost big time, right? And you can see how well Koronek did in Dearborn, didn't deliver a vote. However, the party machine was against us, and they vowed, that's right, the regulars, because McGovern was a little bit radical. He was going to change the war thing. He was going to stop it. He was going to change welfare. Oh, you don't want to do that. I don't want to give people that are poor and out of work a chance to really get a head start. You just want to keep paying them off and keep them poor. He was for health care, national health care, all kinds of things. Nobody remembers this. He's still alive, by the way. And I met him several times, but couldn't get the message out because the party was against us. We couldn't even get a storefront in Dearborn because the party wouldn't let us have any of their facilities, and they spread the word against us. Oh, yeah, George McGovern is officially the Democratic Party nominee, but don't anybody help him because they stole it from us. They got democratically elected representatives to vote for him who weren't in the party before. Ooh, outsiders who joined the party, therefore becoming the party. But the old liners, they changed the rules. That's why they're super delegates. So since 72, they changed the rules before 76 so that the party would still, the hardliners, the old timers, the vested interest, the status quo, the business as usual, keep the campaign contributions flowing from those same rich fat cats, those kind of people, that's what the superdelegates have represented over the years. And so new candidates, fresh new candidates, hard to take hold. I know most of those superdelegates, they're going to go for Hillary. They will. Barack is too new and with no vested interest, you know, no chains that bind him. They say he's got some, you know, corporate contributors. For example, the big pharmaceutical companies are giving him more money for election than Hillary. Why? Because Hillary's health care plan wouldn't be as good for them. It would cut their profit. It'd be better for the United States of America, as I pointed out. Paul Krugman, even in the New York Times, has analyzed Hillary's health care plan for not total single-payer national health care like we really need, I think, my opinion, but closer to it and probably more possible to happen than Barack Obama's. Of course, maybe he'll change his mind when he gets in office. Maybe he'll do something different. Who knows? But if he does get in office. So, but, you know, just want to point out that that's the situation and that's the reality. I know about those superdelegates. I know where they came from. And they are undemocratic. If you're going to have a primary at the public's expense to help promote your candidates and your party, then you better tie it to the percent of votes cast. Not who won, not winner takes all, that's unfair, but to the percentage of delegates you send, tie them to the percent of votes they get in that primary. That's what I think. What do you think about that? Otherwise, don't have the primary. Who the heck needs it? Let the party choose their best candidates among themselves. Don't they know the will of the people already? Don't they have representatives in every state? If they do bad choices, then we don't vote for them as a country. Why have primaries? Especially, why have primaries if you can't help the Green Party or the Libertarian Party or the Constitution Party or whatever other parties there are with their choices, okay, at taxpayer expense? Because those primaries help to promote all the candidates and all the parties and their ideas. And so if we're going to have taxpayer primaries, then we should be forcing the delegates within those parties, however many there are, to vote in a percentage of the votes cast. That's only fair and democratic. And we should include every single political party that qualifies. And the qualifications better be rather low or it's not a democracy. But that's not the way we have it. Because of status quo, because of the backdoor deals, because of vested interests. And personally, someone asked me this the other day. Said, Gornick, you're always talking about change. Yeah, even before it became a buzzword in the latest election. Of course, the present, even if it's good, could always be better. Don't you think? Isn't it possible? Of course it's possible. Then why don't we work for that? Why don't we work for that? Why, just because it's working now and not too many people are complaining and everybody's being paid off, why keep something that's not as good as it could be? You know, every day you should try to be a little better, right? Otherwise, why stay alive? And things are going to set you back. Whether it's your personal health or the economic climate of the world or terrorists. You know, it's so great. Terrorists, the war on terrorism, what did that do to prevent the guy going crazy in Illinois and killing five people last night at a college? You heard about that. Of course, it's on the news. We've got more crazies in the U.S. who don't have a political or a religious affiliation. Why don't we do something to try to help these people before it becomes this? One of the reasons they do it is because it'll give them publicity. Because it's in the news media and they become famous for 3 or 4 days, even though they may be dead. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't make them famous. We shouldn't glorify them after the fact, because somebody is still alive that's bordering on some of these evil impulses. They're going to go ahead and decide this is the way to go out. Go out with the glory of being on TV for 3 days and all your childhood traumas and what your parents didn't do for you and what your teachers did to you and your girlfriend or boyfriend or your dog. I mean, it's all dregs for the press for 4 days. What a wonderful epitaph. It's horrible, of course, but shouldn't be covered. Not for a second. Yeah, say that some crazy person killed five and university's closed down. Don't even give their name in the national media. And Nancy Grace and the rest of you that drag the stuff over the media for weeks and weeks and weeks, it only helps glorify it. You say it doesn't. Oh, we're just trying to inform people and make them aware and understand their problems. What have they done to solve the problems? That's what I say. Oh, understanding might be a first step, but not from the pipe pop psychiatrists and psychologists that they have with their sound bites for 10 seconds, 30 seconds at a time on these TV cable channels. Don't watch them, folks. Don't watch them. I know it's sensational. I know it's entertaining to see these people going crazy, but don't watch them. At least on the radio here, the only sensational element is my voice. Okay? And even that's not so good. So it's either my ideas or you're desperate to, you have nothing else to do. So I hope it's the ideas. And, you know, can't dazzle you with blood and gore and things like that visually, because there's no pictures with radio, at least not yet anyway. Okay. What else do I have to say about that? Well, let me just point your attention to the Obama's votes in that. Just your attention to Jack Lessenberry in the Metro Times this week. Remember, that's a free tabloid-type newspaper, but it's not tabloid in the sense of scandalous stories. They have some very good investigative reporting, only one or two stories a week, but they're there. Try to find them in the News or Free Press. They're there, and they're very local. And Lessenberry's opinions, he's very knowledgeable. And he has most of his column talks about Obama stealing Obama's votes, you know, back to Hillary and the superdelegates, which I summarize for you. But I knew from my own experience back in 72 and 76 what happened and why that happened. But let me just move to his, as long as I've got this in front of me. He says he's been talking about Kwame Kilpatrick, Detroit mayor, of course, for several weeks. It says, today's Kwame moment in history. Set the Wayback Machine. That was something from, I remember, the late 40s, early 50s. There was a Milky the Clown TV show on locally. Just locally. Guy would dress up as a clown, do magic tricks, and he would have these little puppets that would be able to go back in time. And this one puppet would always say, there was this little sort of robot-like puppet who was like magical or had a lot of science, and his name was G. Wizzer. The Wayback Machine, though, I think that actually comes from Rocky and Bullwinkle, is where they went back in time from that animated TV show. Anyway, it just reminds me of all the olden days. So you can see how old Jack Lessenberry is, because he remembers all this stuff. Okay, but he says, so take your time machine back to the fall of 1973 when the future mayor was hard at work on toilet training. That is Kwame. Okay. Spiro, because he was young then, right? He's a young mayor, of course. Spiro T. Agnew, the nasty youth-hating vice president of the United States at that time, was discovered to be a common crook. While governor of Maryland, he started taking kickbacks from public works contractors. He continued soliciting bribes even while he was vice president. Eventually, tired of his greed, some of his crooked contractors seemed to have turned him in. When caught, he claimed innocence. He pleaded ignorance. He blamed the press. He would have blamed white racists, except that he was one. He swaggered. He hid. He swaggered some more. I will not resign even if indicted, he told cheering crowds of stooges. U.S. Attorney General Elliot Richardson knew better. He had an open and shut case, quote-unquote, and told Spiro it was the slammer for sure, that is, unless he played ball. Agnew then resigned, on the spot, from his vice presidency. Remember that, folks? Okay. That is, once they agreed that he wouldn't have to go to jail, all he had to do was pay a fine and pay back taxes. The feds agreed to that since it was clearly in the best interest of Detroit. The nation at that time, to have him gone as quickly as possible. With that, Spiro scuttled off the stage. That's it for today, kids, he concludes. As always, any resemblance to any persons living or having perjured themselves is strictly deliberate. Craig Folley. One of the reasons that the new WHFR Journal, by the way, if you didn't know this, about a month ago or 2 months ago, we switched our time. We used to be from 10 to 11 every Friday, and now we are live from 1 to 2 p.m. every Friday, was because this wonderful local news show called Detroit Today started at 10 on WDET. And Craig Folley, who was formerly with the station and then left, has come back to host that show, especially. It used to be the morning local narrator, moderator, host in the midst of the NPR news. And now his focus is this Detroit Today show. Every day of the week, 10 a.m., I think it's 2 hours long, from Monday through Friday. And they have phone calls coming in, and they cover the events of the day. And they do a great job locally, and they try not to sensationalize. Well, they've been talking about Kwame for a while. About the mayor of Detroit. And every time they bring up a new twist or turn about this story, about whether or not he perjured himself and whether or not he's still an adulterer or was at one point in time, they get these phone calls from the public. And it's, you know, a lot of people, they seem to all be Detroit residents, by the way, that want them to stop talking about Kwame. Number one reason is because he doesn't deserve it. The media are ganging up against him. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. He hasn't been convicted yet. All of the evidence is overwhelming, folks, of perjury. I mean, I don't even want to draw. Normally, I'd say wait for the trial. Let's be fair, wait for the trial. We can't know everything. The Free Press has 1,400 emails to indicate this relationship. And now we found out just 2 days ago that as part of the $9 million settlement where they inappropriately fired a guy for investigating Kwame and his corruption and his misuse of city funds, that there's emails attached to that. They're going to be kept hidden as part of the buyout deal. Well, the Detroit City Council is really mad about that. They weren't even told there was hidden emails. In the first place, Kwame, I think you have to agree here, folks, wasn't it the job of the police department even if they to choose to investigate the mayor if they had evidence that he suspicions, you know, not complete, but evidence that he had done something illegal? Don't you want your police department to investigate even the mayor if there is suspected wrongdoing? Of course you would. Of course you would. I think. But Kwame turns around and fires the guy for trying to investigate him. And now there's all this hidden information, and the city, these people that call in, they all don't like the $9 million of taxpayer money that has to go to pay off the guy that Kwame fired inappropriately, the whistleblower, if you will. So there's so much evidence here, and let me tell you, if you haven't kept up with international world news, Detroit and its mayor are the laughingstock of the world. Okay? His behavior, the overwhelming evidence about wrongdoing and lying and misuse of city property and his authority, he should resign. Maybe he should resign before he's convicted of something, too. Maybe they'll sort of forgive him of all these other crimes that he could do jail time for if he just get the heck out of there. Now, all this swagger and bravado and his gangsta 1940s leather hat and so on. Excuse me, I thought you're an electric public official. You're not a fashion style role model, are you? And besides, who's the obese one around here? Is it Koronik or Kwame? Okay, what sort of example are you setting? That's not all muscle, Mr. Mayor. Excuse me. I know. I'm white. If you can't tell by my voice, but I grew up in Detroit. It's my home. I've always lived in Detroit or the suburbs. Uh-oh, the suburbs. I only live 5 miles from the line. Okay, can't I be still called a Detroiter at heart? I would hope so. And it's not a black or white thing, is it? That's ridiculous. Okay. So whatever you think, but poor Craig Folley, he had callers coming up, coming online and saying, how dare you talk about our mayor like that? And he wasn't saying anything negative to them. I mean, I just basically called the mayor fat. He didn't do that, okay, because he doesn't have an opinion show. He's a real newsman, okay? I'm doing interpretations and trying to stimulate you to think for yourself. And to think about what's going on. And Craig Folley always takes the high road. And here he's been being insulted. You keep covering that. You're not covering about issues of unemployment. He said, well, we cover those too. But right now, how can anything happen? And he made this defense himself this morning. If the mayor's tied up in court battles and bluster and swagger and hiding out and ridiculed. I think Lessenberry pointed out in his column last week, and this is true too, any new businesses wanting to come into Detroit are not going to now. While this is not resolved, you want a corrupt mayor who's the laughingstock of the country, if not the world, to be in charge of the building department, and, you know, You give up on Detroit. All these outside businesses that might have considered coming in, give up on that. You can't trust the mayor. You can't trust city government, therefore. And if it's all, you know, lying and cover-ups and money and whatever, I mean, you know, the image is there. Maybe the substance isn't. There's very little that Kwame actually could be convicted of as a crime in big-time court. Okay? You can't fight the image. It's there, and it's not good for Detroit. It's not good for solving problems. So Craig Folley is only doing like 10 minutes show with the updates on these things, and he's very responsible. I didn't want my show on at the same time, just in case any of my listeners for 20-some years might favor me over him. Again, WDET 101.9, 10, I think it's 12, if not at least 10 to 11, every Monday through Friday. It's called Detroit Today, and it's really worthy of your attention. And get this. I mean, I don't talk much about Detroit because I use the Dearborn papers. I am now, of course, because we're right next door, aren't we? But Craig does. I mean, where else in Detroit Radio do you hear so many Detroit stories? Not just about the mayor, but about, you know, arts, culture, politics. I mean, he's really trying to focus on Detroit, not just the suburbs. So I think he's doing a fantastic job, and DET is doing a fantastic job with that. And who knows if it's going to survive and whether or not we'll lose Craig Folley soon. But we have to continue to be concerned about Detroit and about the mayor, and make you think so that maybe you'll give a phone call if you live in Detroit to the mayor's office. Maybe you'll email his office. He loves emails, apparently. 1,400, can you imagine? 1,400 emails in a year and a half? How many emails a day to keep his adulterous relationship going? Now, it's not current, but, you know, years ago. Wow, what does this guy do for mayor? He must be able to type really fast with his two thumbs or on his keyboard or something. He must be sitting there day and night. I mean, think about this over 18 months. How many hundreds a day? Just cute little messages like sexy yet. I mean, or I don't know what they are. I haven't seen them, but I mean, what's going on here? So I wish the best for the city of Detroit, but Mr. Mayor, the best for you is to get out while the getting is good. And Spiro Agnew is a perfect metaphor for what you're doing wrong at this point, and how to save the city of Detroit is to get the heck out of there. I'm sorry for your image. I know you want to be strong for your kids, okay? But and don't listen to me, Mr. Mayor, if you're tuned into my show. Ha ha! Too busy sending text messages, I bet. Listen to the people of Detroit. And it's amazing to me, number one, how they elected you the last time after the way you behaved in the election and the dirty insults that you gave, really, to the other opposing candidates. But listen to the people of your city, and then also listen to the people of the United States of America and around the world who are laughing at you and your buffoonery, whether you're guilty or not, because you're holding up the city. Yeah, you're robbing the city of its future by staying there. Okay, we're done with that. Here's some public service announcements. And we'll be back with more local news and views on the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm. We're making waves.
When I was young, I was convicted of a gun crime and served 10 years in a federal prison. But that was nothing compared to the 120 months my brother had to walk home alone.
Hey, little man, come here. What you got in your bag?
Or the 520 weeks of sleepless nights my mother faced. Over 3,000 days my sister was left afraid. That's over 80,000 hours I spend wishing I could turn back the clock. And in the end, I spend over 5 million minutes waiting to get out so I could be there for my family.
When's Daddy coming home?
All the while, my family counted the 315,360,000 seconds until they knew I was back, home.
When you go to jail for a gun crime, your family serves a sentence with you. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Henry Ford Community College offers assisted learning services to our students. Assisted learning offers tutoring and support services to help physically challenged, learning disabled, or academically disadvantaged students. Assisted Learning Services is located in the Learning Resource Center right next door to the campus library. Services offered are special testing conditions, reading and writing services, as well as note takers and American Sign Language interpreters. Textbooks on tape, as well as personal and career counseling, are also available to students. For more information on the Assisted Learning Services Center, call 313-845-9617. That's 313-845-9617. Assisted Learning Services, helping you to succeed.
Come on, baby, let the good time roll.
It's WHFR Radio's 9th annual charity bowling event. Staff members from HFCC's own WHFR 89.3 FM will battle on the lanes for a wonderful cause. All takes place on Saturday, February 23rd, noon till 3 p.m. at Clover Lanes Bowling Center on Schoolcraft Road in Livonia. All proceeds benefit the Detroit-based Heartline organization. So stop in to pledge your support for non-commercial radio and make your donation to Heartline. For more information or to make your bowling reservations, call Susan McGraw at 313-845-9842. Need to do that by Tuesday, February 19th. Or check out more information on www.whfr.fm. Have a heart for charity and let the good times roll.
Yes, that's going to happen. We're going to do our thing. And if you want to come by and take a look at us, Clover Lanes from noon to 3, a week from tomorrow, February 23rd, for Heartline, which is a special help facility for substance abuse treatment, and it's a halfway house facility for women. And it's one of those charities, sort of alternative like WHFR, that doesn't get a lot of attention. They're doing a great job. They're running on a shoestring, and we're trying to help them. I mean, you know, that's they're a great organization. And in the Detroit, the Detroit chapter here of Heartline, I believe they are a national organization. They have more than one location, and but they're doing a great job in Detroit, and not many people know about them. So we're going to see how much money we can raise. And yours truly will be there. Yep. Quad bypass operation and all that behind me. I'll be one of the bowlers and trying to raise money for people. So if you want to come by and just watch us and laugh at our bowling skills, again, 12 to 3, Clover Lanes out in Livonia, Schoolcraft Road. And that's a week from tomorrow, Saturday, February 23rd. Speaking of Saturdays, tomorrow, Saturday, February 16th, is an interesting promotional event. Meet Your Perfect Match. It's still Valentine's Day weekend, isn't it, folks? Sure, sure. If you couldn't celebrate Thursday, then tonight or tomorrow, even Sunday, you're going to go out and do something great with that special someone. Or stay in and do something great with that special someone. But it's a Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter's Valentine Adoption Event. And it's called Meet Your Perfect Match at the Friends Valentine's Adoption Event. Saturday, tomorrow, February 16th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Pet Supplies Plus, 2621 South Telegraph Road in Dearborn. Hey, this is what they say. Valentine's is the perfect time to meet your best friend for life. And there's no better best friend than a four-legged furry one. And this is not just find a dog you like and adopt it. They're actually going to survey you. So Elaine Green, who is the executive director for the Friends, says, Meet Your Match is sort of like eHarmony. It's a way for us to ensure that an animal is being placed in the most suitable home. The adoption program was developed by animal behavioralist Emily Weiss, Ph.D. Following an initial evaluation, a dog is tested in five areas. Greeting. How they greet you, being left alone, how well do they do, I guess, level of play energy, food motivation, or they are they a real dog about it, or a pig, and overall behavior. Based on results, a dog is placed in one of three color-coded groups. Purple indicates a low-maintenance, relaxed, couch potato type of dog. Orange indicates a playful, curious dog who can be a busy bee. And green indicates a free-spirited, high-energy dog who requires a great deal of exercise. After prospective parents, adoptees, fill out a one-page personality and lifestyle survey, they too are scored. Adopters are then given a guest pass indicating their color and are encouraged to look for the perfect match among the dogs available for adoption. Now, I have to say that dogs aren't everything in this world, folks. I mean, all the two-leg and feathers creatures are equally important to us, birds, and of course four-legged furry also would be a cat. And now the Dearborn Animal Shelter doesn't handle birds, but they do have lots of cats for adoption too. That's my animal of choice. I'm sorry, I got two cats right now, and we're one big happy family. And it's true, I hate to say it, but if you've been frustrated, and maybe some of Tracy Cox's sex tips from last week's show didn't help you out yet. Maybe you ought to, in terms of finding a best friend for life, maybe a pet could do it. First of all, you're going to probably be the best friend for the rest of their life, because typically people live longer than most pets. But it's really an amazing bonding thing, domesticated animals, and the Dearborn Animal Shelter does a great job with their nonprofit program. Volunteers contracting out from the city to do it better than the city could do it. And it's happened for years. Amazing group, Diane Green and all of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, or the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter group that runs our shelter. You can check out their website at www.dearborn-animals.com. Okay, so you can find out more about this event and other things happening at the Dearborn Animal Shelter on Greenfield Road, south of I-94 in Dearborn, East Dearborn. That website again, dearborn-animals.com. And you can see what animals are available to be adopted on site, online too, or Pet Supplies Plus. Tomorrow, Saturday, February 16th, 11 a.m. to 3, that's 2621 South Telegraph Road. But even if you go to the shelter, they will match you. They will survey you to see if you and the animal are appropriately matched. Isn't that great? I don't think there's other pet stores that do it like that. You know, this is the way it should be done, and they're great people that run the Dearborn Animal Shelter. So you're looking for a best friend for life. If only their life, you could do it with their help. Check them out. We have some instant press releases, thanks to email this morning. I guess it was late yesterday it was released, but City of Dearborn email. First of all, there's temporary permit parking for 7th Streets in West Dearborn, and it's taking effect during that CSO, that is the Combined Sewer Overflow Construction Project. Very confusing. Imagine this, but, you know, I guess you're getting your money's worth for $360 million of Dearborn taxpayer money. You better be. But just in case you live in West Dearborn, here you go. A new temporary parking system is put into effect on 7th Streets in one West Dearborn neighborhood to help prevent non-resident parking during nearby construction of part of the federally mandated CSO project. Residents living on Alexandrine Street, Brainerd Avenue, Law Street, Long Boulevard, River Lane, and South Reginald Street and Sylvan Street have received or will soon receive detailed information about the new temporary parking permit system. The streets are located near Military Street and north of Michigan Avenue. The goal of the system is to prevent CSO workers from parking personal or commercial vehicles on these streets during construction of a portion of the project. That's interesting, isn't it? That the same people that are working for the city, they expect, if they didn't have this in place, to park illegally. They couldn't just tell the people they've hired that if we catch you parking in residential areas rather than where we tell you, you are fired? The city couldn't do it that way? I don't believe it. And by the way, I said 360. Well, the last estimate was, and the press release says it's $320 million. What's a difference of $40 million after you're over $300 million? You know, what's 10% more or less? Eesh. By the way, I bet you when tour this is done, it'll be more. All those delays, I thought I read that the delays are going to hold this project up for several years, and therefore it will cost more, because things cost more the more you wait. Well, I hope everybody in West Dearborn has fun, but seems backwards to me, doesn't it? They don't want the CSO workers to park in the residential areas. Just tell them not to, or they're fired from the job. Wouldn't that be the way to go? Or they work for the big company, and the company won't tell them no, and they got a right to park any place they want to, because it's public parking, right, on residential streets, and so must be some really convoluted legalities there. But if they're working for us under contract, just threaten to fire the whole construction company if their workers park in residential streets and not where they're told to park by the city. I don't think that's limiting freedom of parking. If you've got an employee and you tell him he's got to park in this lot or that lot, that's part of the job, okay? Isn't it? I know, it's from City Attorney Deborah Walling will call and say, no, there's a right to park any place you want to in this free country. Yeah. Okay, moving on. City of Dearborn is recognizing special needs of autistic citizens. There's a sticker program. It's going to promote safety by alerting and training emergency personnel. Get this one. Dearborn comes up with the darndest things. Stickers and permits and rules, all to help a wide variety of wonderful people, including, and I know that's true, okay, including autistic citizens. When I say wonderful, I mean everybody's wonderful in their own ways. Everybody's special. Everybody's special. I'm talking about special needs. Everybody is special, including people, of course, who are autistic or have broken legs or can't hear or can't see. We're all special, okay? And we all need the society to do things for us to make our lives as full and as productive for ourselves and for the society as possible. But here we go, more stickers and rules. Oh, my gosh, this programming provides a special sticker to households with an autistic family member. It can be placed on the door of the home or the car so that public safety professionals, cops, who may interact with autistic citizens, are prepared to treat them appropriately. Oh, so if they're slurring their speech, you think they're drunk or something, right? Or dumb. Yeah. Have to carry ID cards or something. I guess that is a problem. I mean, you know, they talk about profiling. See somebody that's bobbing their head back and forth or slurring their speech in your mind, to your opinion. You think they're drunk or on drugs and you draw your gun maybe and get out of that car. And if they don't get out fast enough or their hands do something, you think they shoot them. I guess there's a problem there. I guess there could be a problem there. And you wouldn't blame the policeman, would you? You shouldn't, because they just have to respond quickly to any perceived threat. And someone who's not normal might actually evidence something that they would that could easily be interpreted even by a rational non-police type person as a threat. I don't know. Here at Henry Ford Community College, we have all kinds of people taking classes, and I don't think people that are in wheelchairs or otherwise noticeably having an issue are on drugs. I just never think that, because they're usually not at all, you know. It's a college, you know. We're all trying to learn, and so I help people no matter what the situation. But a policeman, they have a different kind of job, you know, and... So I guess I'm the innocent type one that would try to be compassionate and not jump to any sort of a threat awareness, and I just would try to be helpful. And so it's a problem. Anyway, communications with citizens is critical, says Fire Chief Nazir Hassim. The voluntary sticker program, it's just a voluntary thing. Alert safety officials there's an autistic child or family member in the home or in the car. He says if we are aware, we can handle them accordingly. What about somebody with a temper? Caution, I blow my top frequently at stupid public officials that come up with too many rules and stickers. I mean, maybe we need a sticker for that one. I'm just joking here. Just joking. I hope everybody in the city knows that it's a difficult problem, and I wish I had a better answer. But I went through this with stickers, neighborhoods. I don't know how much the city is still supporting this, but different neighborhoods have stickers that indicate the residents live in the neighborhood. Well, I got a problem with that, okay? And I do not have a sticker on my car for my neighborhood. Then again, I don't park on the street because I never know when it's a public safety day or when they're going to plow my street with 1 inch of snow on it. You know, we had a winter emergency alert, and we had about 2 inches, and oh, they're going to plow. Well, we had 5 inches 2 days ago. Nobody plowed. At least I didn't notice anybody. I don't remember the sirens going off. Of course, that came all of a sudden, not 18 hours in advance. Media scare again. But the whole point is, if they don't have a sticker on their car that indicates their neighborhood, I live in a neighborhood, so the neighborhood has a letter. Okay, it's a small, like 3x3 sticker, and it goes on your back bumper, and it's got a letter on it to represent the neighborhood association that you're part of or you're living within the boundaries of. And the idea was, oh, anybody who parks around the street that doesn't have that sticker, that means they're an outsider. And let's watch their car very well, suspiciously. Ooh, they aren't supposed to be there. Oh, maybe they're visiting. Maybe they're a valued, cherished guest. But let's hassle their car. Let's watch them like a hawk. They could be thieves. Well, anybody could be a thief, including somebody that's got one of those 3x3 stickers on their car. That was the stupidest program in the world, but might make some residents feel better. Ooh, a badge of honor. Look at my letter on my car. I live here. Don't you know you live there? I couldn't believe that one. Just couldn't believe it, and I refuse to support that, of course. Everybody's got their own spin. Well, thank you, City of Dearborn, for those latest press releases, and because now it just brought my attention to them, and I made fun of them, I guess, so I apologize, but there's got to be better answers. And if all our city officials have time for sitting around coming up with more rules and more stickers, you know, we're in a lot of trouble. You know, it's 1,400 emails and so on. You know, that's not government taking care of problems and moving us ahead into the future. That is making the present more difficult based on trying to preserve the status quo, which isn't so hot anyway. I'd rather have problems related to change than problems related to making the status quo more difficult for everybody. What do you think? Okay, here's another one. Going to get into trouble on this, and we've only got about 5 minutes before we go from the Earth to the Stars with Carrie Zaitz, another Night Sky Report that's going to be coming up here real soon as we conclude our show for the day. And, hey, Highway 61, the best in local and indie blues for 4 hours with DJ Joanne Korchinska coming up at 2 o'clock today. This is the headline from the Press and Guide this Wednesday, February 13th. Compromise reached on DHS, that's Dearborn High School Athletic Field Project. We covered this a couple months ago. Jody Rapallo reports, compromise. Working together, staff members and the community created a new proposal for the Dearborn High School Athletic Facilities. With a budget of $2.6 million and a wish for $4 million, school board trustees could not stand behind the elaborate design without some kind of change. In fact, the plan was reduced by about $1.2 million, a cost the board said they could work with. The construction cost was reduced to $2.9 million, and the total cost, about $3.4 million. Oh, I don't get that. Total cost and construction cost, there's a difference of $500,000. I can't figure it. Well, only $2.6 million in funds is already covered from a bond sale, so they still got some money to make up there. The biggest change is in the size of the ticket booth, concession stand, and restroom facility on the east side of Dearborn High's campus. The size of that facility was reduced, bringing the cost down $150,000. They also eliminated a second concession stand on the west side of campus, taking $200,000 off the price tag. How many concessions do you need? In my high school, we had all the stands. We had a little dink concession stand. What, we didn't sell enough? Got to make a profit on this. What do they sell at these concessions? I haven't been to a high school game since my senior year because I was running the concession stand as president of my senior class at Flat Rock High School. Yeah, right. Follow Telegraph South and get to Flat Rock. Or Level Pebble, as we used to call it. We had a little dink shack that we sold Cokes and chips and a couple other things. What the heck is going on? Is it that the school makes a ton of money if they're selling burgers and fries? And what kind of concession stands are these days? Is it like a McDonald's restaurant on site? What is going on? Because the second concession stand, $200,000, what kind of concession stand is that? You can get a three-bedroom, two-bath tri-level for $200,000. What kind of concession stand costs $200,000? It must have a full kitchen and a full bathroom and deep fryers and freezers and refrigerators. And my gosh, what? Now, got to tell you, folks, because I know this is true, that any sort of building prices for public institutions, you know, schools, high schools, colleges, whatever the cost is for an average homeowner, like to put in a swimming pool or whatever, multiply times 5 or 10 for the cost of the school. Is there a reason for that? No, it's because the contractors get all that money because they all bid this extra cost. Is there extra licensing that goes on? No. In fact, they can do the job almost whenever they want to, usually under no particular... They're under a guide, a deadline of some sort, but usually they even get an incentive at colleges and schools for building it faster than that deadline, which they always could do if they wanted to. So, you know, I never understood the construction price difference, and I'm sure there's very good reason that these companies charge so much, but... Couldn't you just buy a West Dearborn home and move it to the other side, you know, and you'd have about 2,000 square feet and a kitchen and restrooms and a living room and a dining room and a garage, an enclosed garage. And was this $200,000? Well, anyway, they brought the price down. It does make you wonder whether or not you really need high school athletics of this sort. Okay, Flat Rock, we had no facilities except we still had the football team, we had the soccer team, we had the track team. I was on the track team. Didn't do well, but I was on the team somehow. And we got the exercise. We won the awards. In Class B area, Flat Rock High School won best in the state. In football and in baseball once too. We had no facilities. We didn't have a $200,000 concession stand. And yet we had the educational advantage. We had the sports, you know, practice. In fact, several of the baseball players at Flat Rock High School in the 60s and 70s went on to the Detroit Tigers. Fred Gladding, anybody remember that name? He was sort of a utility pitcher, but he was with Flat Rock. Oh, my gosh. So good luck on that athletic field project. Just more ridiculous cost expenditures. I'm sorry. Everybody's having fun, right? That's good. Let's keep thinking about stuff. Always challenge the status quo. Let's try to do better in the future. Here's the Night Sky Report with Carrie Zaitz. Take care out there and stay tuned for the Highway 61 show with Joanne Korchinska. It's WHFR Dearborn.
Hello, this is Carrie Zaitz with your Night Sky Report. Have you ever wondered who is in the Space Club? The Space Club is the group of countries that can send things or people up into space. There are different levels of participation in a space club. If you have some money, expertise, and motivation, you can send stuff into space. If you have a lot of money, high-end expertise, and a lot of motivation, you can send people into space. Many countries have launched satellites into orbit for purposes of research, scientific, political, or military. Sending stuff into space is the first level of space exploration. The first satellite ever launched was the famous 200-pound beeping beach ball, Sputnik. The Soviet Union had launched not only the first orbiting satellite, but the first volley in what would be the increasingly heated space race between our two countries. A month later, the Soviets struck again with Sputnik 2, a heavier version containing not only a science payload, but Laika, a female dog. The United States responded immediately. NASA was created, and in 1958, America successfully launched Explorer 1. Though the payload was smaller, it helped discover the radiation belt surrounding the Earth. It was clear that satellites were the wave of the future. 1960 was a big year for satellite firsts. The first solar probe, first weather satellite, first navigation satellite, and the first communication satellite. That was nearly 50 years ago. What would we do without our satellites of today? From 1957... in 1962, the only members in the space club were the U.S. and the USSR. Canada knocked on the door of the club in 1962, though there